This is a World War III update. I'm going to make this one quick. Look, there's only a few data points that you need to assimilate into your repertoire of understanding in order to assess the viability of these so-called peace talks. Chief among them is the fact that NATO's Mark Rutte, the chief of NATO, had his arm twisted by Donald Trump today into committing warships to the Strait of Hormuz. Well, why, pray tell me, do you need warships in the Strait of Hormuz if you're about to strike a deal with the Iranians? Weren't you supposed to enter into some partnership where you are going to both profit off the strait and administrate it together? Here's what Donald Trump said today. There are reports that Iran is charging fees to tankers going through the Strait of Hormuz. No way! They've just been saying that for the last week. They better not be, and if they are, they better stop now, President Donald J. Trump. Okay, so this is how it's going to go. This whole freedom of navigation thing, that's really the crux of the flare-up in hostilities from here on in. The only reason why you're sending NATO warships to the Strait of Hormuz, it's not to demine the strait. They have littoral ships for that. The Iranians could probably do that themselves. They don't need help in coordinating and administrating and regulating traffic that is going through that region. The Omanians, the UAE, as well as the Iranians, they've been doing that for decades, okay? They don't need Europe to help out with that. The only reason why Donald Trump would go kicking and screaming to Mark Rutte that he needed help, because he knew that the war was about to flare up again, and that's exactly what we're seeing with the air bridge of nonstop cargo, military cargo flights, likely containing manpower and materiel that are going from the United States to Europe to the Middle East, the exact same thing that we've seen in the run-up to the current war. So the peace talks are mostly bullshit. As I explained yesterday, you don't kill a guy's whole family, including his children and his grandchildren, and just have a situation where you're going to make amends and sing kumbaya and hold hands. That's not how that works. That's not how that story goes. Now you have a bunch of hardliners in there. You probably have a couple who are trying to defect, and that may well be, as we come to find, Aragachi and Galabuf, who are the ones that Trump was referencing when he talked about people who wanted to remain anonymous, who are trying to make deals with us, but they can't because the IRGC is holding their hands to the fire. That may be the case. I guess we're going to find out. A lot of Iranian hardliners are suspicious that there is no retaliation for the massive, unprecedented bombardment that we've seen across Lebanon yesterday when the Israelis hit over 100 targets within a very short period of time. These were in urban areas. There were no door knocks. This was all-out war on Hezbollah. Clearly a slap in the face and possibly a bit of a flex. Okay, so in addition to that, we've had explosions throughout Iran today in multiple locations, at least a half a dozen separate locations reported explosions, and that means that somebody is bombing inside Iran while this so-called delegation of Iranians is going to Islamabad to meet J.D. Vance and Steve Jerkoff and that other guy, what's his name, Kushner? Yeah, so that's what this looks like at this point in time. It's all time buying exercise. Ultimately, this boils down to the same criteria. They want control of the oil. They want the regime gone. They want to get the nuclear material back. They want total dominion over the Middle East, and they're not going to stop. Okay, so if the Iranians actually genuinely are entering into these negotiations believing that there is any prospect for peace whatsoever, then they either are delusional or they're pulling a Delcy Rodriguez stunt. That's the only thing I can imagine it would be at this point in time. Period, point blank. So Trump's base is now currently divided, okay? More divided than I think I've ever seen before. And I can hold my head high in knowing that since the beginning, when it was like walking into a 100-mile-an-hour headwind, when I made that first video, when I told people Trump's going to be the World War III president, he's not going to stop the Russia-Ukraine war, it's going to get worse, he's going to start a war with Iran, gold is going to go to the moon, oil prices are going to go up. Here we are. I was right all along. Now you got Alex Jones, Marjorie Taylor Greene, Tucker Carlson, and Candace Owens all receiving the brunt of Trump's shitpost today that was almost a novel size in scope. And, you know, they say that you should probably speak less. That's one of the 50 laws of power. Well, it's one that Trump certainly doesn't respect or attempt to emulate. Anyways, he's throwing them under the bus, which is a bad move, because all that means is that the only people who are left are the people who follow accounts like Cat Turd, or what is that other idiot? Even Benny Johnson threw him under the bus. See, at least Benny Johnson is smart enough to read the room at this point in time, even though he's been grifting for Trump and Netanyahu in Israel all along. It's just that his market share dwindled to such appallingly low levels that he had to make the switch because he knew that the ship is sinking, and they bailed. Okay, but now those people, in order to save face and resolve their cognitive dissonance, they've convinced themselves that, well, they're not convincing themselves because they know they're full of shit, but they're convincing their audience that Trump was innocent here. Trump was bamboozled by Benjamin Netanyahu, that we were right about Trump. Everything Trump claimed he was going to do, he wanted to do, but those darn Israelis, the Israeli scapegoat, derailed the whole plan. And look, this is not to throw shade on people who genuinely voted for the guy who thought that he was the better of two evils. That's fine. But I was one of the few non-liberals, because I go which way the wind needs to blow. Sometimes, you know, there's too many people on this side of the plane, so we got to move a few people to the other side of the plane. But I was one of the few non-liberals, I'd like to consider myself more of an anarchist than anything, that was saying, watch out, because this is their World War III president. Okay, and now when you have an animal that's backed into a corner and has the temperament of the mercurial Donald Trump, then you're faced with a situation where if there is a plan C, D, or E that involves, I don't know, some kind of false flag attack in order to unify and galvanize the population for war, well, this is the time to do it, okay? When popularity gets this low in the midst of a war, planes start flying into buildings, all right? So I would not be surprised at this point in time if they don't execute one of those plans. And who knows what it's going to be. Is it going to be cyber? Is it going to be something? Because today, in addition to the air bridge that was flowing into the Middle East from the United States, we also had cargo planes from Pakistan heading into Saudi Arabia. Okay, so we had military cargo planes from Pakistan flying into Saudi Arabia. That's suspicious, of course, because right before this war started, they made a military strategic mutually assured support pact, where if one was attacked, the other would join in. And of course, this is mostly a one-way relationship, because if the Saudis were attacked, considering they don't have nuclear weapons, this was essentially tantamount to them being a nuclear partner with Pakistan. So some people are suspicious that the cargo on this plane could potentially be nuclear in nature. Of course, Pakistan would not want to fire those nuclear missiles from Pakistan. They would want to do it from Saudi Arabia. And there is nothing, I think, that the Saudis don't already have from a conventional standpoint that the Pakistanis could offer. So the Saudis are pretty well covered. They buy a lot of military equipment from the Americans. They even have more advanced stuff than the Pakistanis. So the only thing I could see the Pakistanis sending there is maybe some nukes. Who knows? I guess we're going to find out. So we also know that the Pakistani military chief met with Donald Trump at a luncheon, of all things, which was highly unusual considering the Pakistani ties to the Chinese. Pakistan gets 80% of its military equipment from China. But since, what was that guy's name, Imran Khan, since he was thrown in jail, there might have been a shift, okay, over to the United States. And maybe this is what we are seeing right now. So potentially the Iranians have either been strong-armed into attending this meeting that they know is just a bunch of bullshit, and they're kicking the day X can down the road a couple more weeks, and they know that it's going to be lights out in the Middle East soon. So they figure, why not dignify one last attempt at reconciling this thing, even though you know it's futile. Or they're turncoats and defectors, and they're trying to escape the IRGC's clutches, and they're working in coordination with the United States, Mossad, and all of the Gulf states in order to extirpate the IRGC from Iran. That's really the only two options. Either they're defecting, and this is why they abandoned Lebanon. A lot of people think they did. There's protests in the streets in Iran. People are pissed off because the Iranians did not respond to Israel after they attacked Lebanon in the manner that they did, and that they didn't respond to the attacks that they face today, and that all of the duplicity on the part of the negotiating team right from the start in terms of the initial ceasefire terms, which included a ceasefire that extended to Lebanon that was not honored. Then you have Pete Hegseth making threats about acquiring the enriched uranium. Now you have Trump talking about how, well, we never agreed that Iran would charge a toll to go through the strait, even though he did say that there was going to be some sort of mutual benefit, financial or otherwise, in that respect. Now, there have been a few ships that have moved through today, way off the highs. I think there was like six ships. One of them was an oil tanker. So it is something, but it still falls short of what is required in order to bring things back to balance, well short of that. So the fact that the futures oil trades are that detached from the biophysical reality is really simply astounding at this point, that oil is still only $100 a barrel, when today there was another major fire at a Mexican oil refinery. There was probably two or three more fires that are still ongoing in Russia. One in Crimea yesterday. There was another one today. I can't remember where it was. There was a few other fires that are still burning across the Middle East as a result of attacks yesterday. So, you know, that's where it's going right now. Now, I want to tell you guys something, and you're not going to hear this anywhere else, okay? So here's the deal. The drought in the United States is getting really, really bad. Nobody's talking about it yet. And the reason why it's likely going to get much, much worse is because they're expecting a super El Nino shift. Yes, a super El Nino shift, a supercharge. And they base that on the ocean currents and the sea temperature that they're currently assessing to be much higher than usual. And we're about to shift into that. So right now we're in La Nina. You've seen a record-shattering warm temperatures in the United States in March, not here in Canada, where we have this polar vortex or whatever you want to call it that has just been stagnant, just sitting over just Canada. It refuses to cross the border. So guys, if you want to send some of your heat across our border, we would greatly appreciate it. But we're the only place in the world, I think, right now that has record cold temperatures, maybe a part of Antarctica, like a little part of it, but everywhere else, Asia, Middle East, Europe, all record high temps, as well as the United States. And it's going to get worse. Now, I can't show you a high resolution drought map because I got the artist in there painting the mural right now. If you want to see what that's coming along like, go check on Instagram. It's pretty cool. But more importantly, this drought situation. So it's looking really, really bad, and it's starting to cross over into the breadbasket. And this is before El Nino, and that's going to happen right around the time. And these things are not, you know, instantaneous. It's not like a light switch or anything. It's gradual. But they're thinking mid to late summer is when we get the full shift to El Nino. And so that is getting close to harvest time, which means next year we could see scary, like Dust Bowl drought conditions. And you put on top of that the bottleneck now in the supply chain with agricultural products like chemicals and pesticides and fertilizers, and just the price of fuel in general, diesel, that is going to drastically amplify this problem. So this is going to be a big deal. Okay, remember where you heard it first. This is going to be a big deal. We're in the age of polycrisis, man, and this one is going to be massive. I would encourage you to go check out Drought Monitor and just pay attention to that, because this is probably the worst I've ever seen it. It was even worse because this is covering a lot more territory than the droughts that we've seen in California back in 2019, 2020, when the water levels were really low. So this is a bad one because, of course, it's starting to infringe upon the breadbasket where the majority of the calories are created, not just in North America, but for the world. So that's going to be problematic. Fortunately, up here, our farmers are going to be happy because we got quite a bit of moisture. But when El Nino comes, that usually affects us up here too. So what that means is we might have a relatively wet spring. And then it's going to get really hot again throughout summer. And, you know, we might start seeing wildfires, big wildfires again next year. We might get a little bit of a break. There is some places in Alberta, though, that are incredibly dry and are probably going to go up in smoke, unfortunately. Besides that, I think that's all I got for you today. Just wanted to make a quick vid just to bring you up to speed. And at the time of making this video, I don't think that much has changed. We don't have official confirmation yet that the Iranian delegation has touched down in Islamabad. There was a rumor that they had, but it was then walked back by the Iranian government, okay? Yeah, so interesting stuff. All right, my friends, see you tomorrow.